Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. The Reckoning. Every relationship eventually has one of those pivotal moments, an experience that either binds two people together or pulls them apart. This week, Harry Lennox of NBC's The Blacklist takes us into one of these moments. Here he is reading Tim McEwen's essay, In a Small Bag, She Packed All Our Hopes.
3.5 years ago, while my fiancée Sarah and I were having sex, I had a heart attack. It took a little less than 7 minutes from the time Sarah dialed 911 until the EMTs were in our apartment. During the short wait, I sat propped up on the bed while Sarah relayed questions from the emergency dispatcher. What were my symptoms? Was I properly elevated? Had I chewed the aspirin? Throughout the conversation, our cat, Finian, was lying on a pillow next to me, his eyes half closed, purring. Sarah was remarkably composed throughout. It surprised me a little, her Buddha-like calm, because she hates not knowing how things turn out. She won't even watch an episode of Deadwood without first reading the summary, even though we've seen the whole series at least 3 times. When the EMTs arrived, they confirmed I had suffered a myocardial infarction. After asking me about the circumstances surrounding the incident, like whether or not I had taken any erection enhancement medication. Just so you know, I had not. Then they loaded me onto a gurney. The rest of my memory of that night is lost in a morphine haze. I'm sure it was a far more difficult night for Sarah than for me. I was either unconscious or heavily sedated while Sarah had nothing to do but wait and worry. Whatever plans or aspirations she had for our lives had been suddenly and irrevocably altered. No matter the outcome, she had to know nothing would be the same. Life plans can be fragile enough when both people are healthy. We managed to move on with our lives since that night. Sarah and I were married as planned. We left our home and jobs in Ottawa, where I had lived for nearly all of my 50 years, and moved to Toronto, a far better place for our creative work, but a change I had been unable to make before then. I also quit smoking, which was easier than I imagined, because I wasn't doing it for me, but for her. Eventually, our sex life came back, too. After a couple of years, what felt as if a ticking time bomb were under the bed, which was about as much fun as it sounds. The whys of it, why we got married, why I quit smoking, why we were able to finally uproot ourselves from Ottawa, may seem obvious. I had experienced a traumatic event that underlined the consequences of poor choices. But there was nothing inevitable about my response to my heart attack. In fact, it would have been far more in character for me simply to return to my usual behavior, since I am stubborn to a fault, with a tendency toward casual self-destruction. Early in my adult life, I had decided I would do whatever I liked, whenever I liked, and sort it out as I went along. I got away with that for 20 years. So I found myself close to 50 with a life I didn't much care for and no way out that I could see. While we waited for the EMTs to arrive, I was mostly at peace about how my life might end. This was not about putting on a brave face. A significant part of me truly wanted it to be finished. Then Sarah did this small thing. Just a simple act that probably would have gone unnoticed under different circumstances. As the EMTs asked their awkward questions, Sarah packed a bag of things she thought I would need at the hospital. underwear, my glasses, some books. Enough for a short stay. Nothing more. My initial reaction to what she was doing was resentment. Why would she want to complicate this? Why couldn't she just let me go? But then I pictured her returning to our apartment alone in the event of my death, carrying that bag of stuff I would never use. And that image stuck with me and started taking up space in my head. I am not sure if we can sway the outcome either way, to just let go and die or to will ourselves to live. But what Sarah did in packing that bag for me, the quiet hope her act spoke to. That was the reason I listened to my doctors, took my medication, and even quit smoking. As much as her intention was affirming and positive, it also exposed my own selfishness, the pettiness of giving up on life just because sometimes life is hard. It embarrassed me, the way being caught in a lie is embarrassing. Love doesn't afford us the luxury of caring, or not caring, only about ourselves. How love reveals itself is sometimes a slow process, the gradual buildup of all the seemingly mundane acts of kindness, sacrifice, mindfulness, and even bad behavior two people share. Sarah's act was an instance of what love looks like, stripped of all the usual bells and whistles. To have the opportunity to witness that, regardless of the circumstances, left me feeling like a lucky man. It also made me want to match her level of commitment. Sarah had raised the bar for me in a way I could not ignore. It is embarrassingly simple to see how smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day for 30 years would lead to my particular physical difficulties. It is far less clear how to identify and perhaps even repair the more indistinct emotional damage that builds up over time. One thing I am sure of is how badly I have misused the phrase, "I love you," over the years. I have used it as an emotional tool and said it as something expected of me. I even have said it because I needed to hear it echoed back. These days, though, the weight of those words is something new. I understand that phrase in a new way, just as I have a fresh appreciation of the phrase near-death experience. Sarah is now 30 and I am 52. If things take their natural turn, the math says she probably will watch me die instead of me watching her. I painted that likelihood for her in neon 3.5 years ago, but she never wavered in her decision to marry me. There is an obvious connection to be made between rehabilitating my physical heart and what Sarah has helped me change in my life. Every day that I wake up and everything seems to be working correctly is a good day, and I am grateful for that. But the metaphorical heart, the heart that shows us the difference between simply living and actually feeling alive, is the one I have come to cherish above all else. Thanks to that packed bag and what it taught me about love, mine seems to be working fine these days.
Harry Lennox reading Tim McEwen's piece, "In a Small Bag, She Packed All Our Hopes." Tim and Sarah's relationship hasn't been an easy one. We talk with both of them after the break. We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tim and Sarah McEwen live in Toronto. This year, they will celebrate their 6th wedding anniversary. We invited both of them into the studio, and we asked Tim to take us back to the moment he saw Sarah after he was admitted to the hospital.
They had me in observation. They were sort of trying to figure out what they were going to do. And Sarah came in, and I had another heart attack.
I was standing next to him.
I never thought about that connection. Yeah, maybe that was it.
Great.
That's right. Tim had a second heart attack when he saw Sarah. And it turned out he needed surgery. Sarah's mother, whose own marriage has a major age difference, warned Sarah that this could be the beginning of a rough road.
When Tim and I first got engaged, you know, she said, "Are you sure this is a good idea? Because he's a lot older than you. And, you know, the way that you guys have your relationship together now, the way that you live now, in 20 years, it's not going to be the same." And she was actually like, "When he gets older, you guys are not going to have sex anymore. So you have to be prepared for that."
Sarah and Tim laugh it off now, but when we pressed Sarah on this point, she conceded that because of the 22-year age gap, she will likely end up taking care of Tim.
At some point in time, every couple is going to reach the stage in their relationship where they are old together or separately or whatever. And, you know, old, again, it's a frame of mind, it's a state of mind. And, you know, Tim is my husband, he's my best friend. If I can't take care of him by myself, if I need to, then I will find a way to make sure that he's cared for. But I'm still going to be an old lady when he's an old man. And I mean, kind of secretly in my heart, I'm already an old lady. So I like to sit in a rocking chair and I like to watch the BBC.
But life for the couple has never been easy. A few years after the heart attacks, Tim was meeting Sarah after work in a local coffee shop.
And I got there and he was sitting down and I was like, "Oh, hey.
Are
you
like,
okay?"
"Hey." And I was like, nah.
He's
and
like,
this time I was pretty sure. Like,
well, and I would have to, yeah. He said, "No, I think we really need to go to the hospital." And I was like, "Oh, okay." This time there was no question. I didn't doubt
didn't
his
ask
like
if
health.
I had, like eaten like, the wrong thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
I was just like, "Oh, we need to go to the hospital? Okay, taxi."
It was another heart attack. And despite Tim's radical lifestyle shift, healthy eating, exercise, no smoking, doctors determined he was genetically predisposed to dangerously high cholesterol. He has chronic heart disease.
I'm aware of my limitations in a way that I wasn't before. And I find that irritating, you know, more than anything else.
But that fragility also motivates Sarah and Tim to live as fully as possible. For now, they've put the idea of children aside and are focusing on being together.
We want to see the world.
Yeah. While I still, and particularly, like, I'm still fairly robust and mobile and stuff like that, and we really want to do that while we can.
Like, speaking about getting old earlier, right? Like, this right now is kind of our time.
Yeah. Sarah has kind of opened up the world to me in the sense that she's activated that thing that was dormant in me, the idea of adventure, the idea of taking steps into the unknown and not being worried about it. It always comes out sounding a little maudlin, but the truth of that is pretty weighty. The truth of having somebody on your side and knowing that they really do have your back because you've seen it is, you know, I don't know. I sleep better at night, that's for sure.
Sarah and Tim McEwen. They live in Toronto, but probably not for long. Their bucket list includes some time abroad in Scotland, with their cat Finian, of course. Daniel Jones says one line made this essay for him. We'll hear from him when we get back. Welcome back. Modern Love editor Dan Jones says that for him, this essay came down to this one line.
"Love doesn't afford us the luxury of caring or not caring only about ourselves. You know, we always think about being lucky to be in love and to have found love and to have all these sort of benefits of being in a loving relationship. And he really gets to the heart of the responsibility of love. And if you're going to have this kind of a relationship and this kind of a bond with someone, you have to care about yourself. You know, you have to take care of yourself. And that person is depending on you not just going away. And this comes as a revelation to him that makes him think, I'm still going to probably die before her, but I better live up to my end of the bargain for as long as I can.
Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. Thanks again to Harry Lennox for reading this week's essay. Turns out he related quite a bit to Tim's story.
You know, it turns out I'm 52 years old. Recently, in September of 2016, I was in a very bad car accident in North Carolina. And then several years before that, I almost drowned in the Pacific Ocean. And I think that, you know, these things that occur to us philosophically, emotionally, after you face death, makes you reassess where your life is. And I thought that the writer of this essay captured that beautifully for a middle-aged man. And I love the positive turn, the positive change that he makes, which is not really about himself, but more for the idea of love and for the love of his life, Sarah. It just spoke to me, and it was an honor for me to try to put a voice to those words.
Harry Lennox. You can see him on The Blacklist, which airs Thursday nights on NBC. Last week, we asked you to send in your experiences with risk in response to Rachel Pye Jones's essay, A Child of Two Worlds. In it, she wrestles with the idea of having a third child far away from her Minnesota roots.
Pirates in the Red Sea, border skirmishes in Eritrea, intermittent political tensions in Ethiopia, and Al-Qaeda terrorists hanging out in Yemen. The trouble was that the nearest Western hospital was a four-hour flight away in Dubai. The trouble was that I was terrified to be pregnant and give birth in Djibouti.
So we asked you to share a time you went ahead and embraced risk. Thank you to everyone for your stories. Here's one from Stephanie, who wrote in from Cincinnati.
I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I was dreaming of buying a house. So I bought a 1972 Dodge van and, with my friend, left town for a month, driving around the country. We stopped in Cincinnati for about 12 days, during which we viewed five properties. We definitely liked one more than the others and made an offer on it right away. After almost 2 weeks of waiting for an answer, I was anxious to continue our trip, so we left Cincinnati. Then, a few days later, as we were pulling into Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, I received a phone call from our realtor and found out that our offer was accepted. Looking back on this now, I realize the incredible risk I took to get here. I had just spent nearly all of my savings on a 150-year-old, 4,000-plus square foot building in a city I'd only spent 12 days in with no job or prospects or friends or even a plan. Anything could have happened, literally anything. But by moving more than halfway across the country and putting nearly everything I had into this building, the life I believed I could make here is actually happening.
Thanks for sharing your story with us, Stephanie, and continued luck to you in Cincinnati. We love hearing from listeners, and we want to hear from you. Was there a moment in your life, or maybe a specific experience, that altered your entire worldview? If so, email us or send a voice memo to modernlove@wbur.org. Next week on the podcast, Melanie Linsky of HBO's Togetherness and the new film Little Boxes on how a neighborhood bully saved a marriage.
There is a perverse comfort in it. Anthony and I had something to share again. We were united in battle. We had passion in our lives, if not quite the conventional kind. Some couples take out personal ads and bring home swingers. We provoked the nut down the road. I craved the attention, and Anthony craved the release.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.